welcome your ears to a Wednesday edition of the Triple Option with RBKD on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Streaming live all the time, when and wherever you may be. Live, local, and digital on the Horn app, on Twitch, and at hornfm.com. On today's show, is being sat on the worst way to die. Plus, the best college football games of week one, the best NBA play-in game ever, and Paul Feinbaum is doing his best job to tick off Texas fans. Joined alongside by lifetime Longhorn and card-carrying member of DBU, he's a mercenary mouthpiece, pop culture critic, and the one they call Blackstradamus. He's also the inventor of the Corona kit. He is Rod Babers. Rod B, how we doing today?
Doing good, brother. Hump Day edition of the Triple Option. Oh, I like the new board. That's legit.
New board.
Yeah, the new board.
Can you read it?
Run right side. I like that.
I appreciate
that. Single foot, 12 inches from Amazon.
Dot, dot, dot. Me.
Okay.
Introducing myself. I guess the board is introducing himself.
I like that board, though. It's nice.
Yeah.
Is it still chalk?
It's chalk. No, it's like LED marker.
Some fancy technology.
Yeah,
gift
from the parents.
It's pretty good.
I think it was more of a gift for them because they couldn't see the chalkboard on Twitch.
So. Hey, those are the best kind of gifts.
Yeah. They hooked it up. I'll be here as well. Hi, I'm BK, Brad Kellner. Together, we are the Triple Option with RBKD. Rocking and rolling until 7 o'clock here on the Horn. We appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Wednesday afternoon with us. Once again, no KD today, no KD this week. He is out on vacation. He will return to the show on Monday. So it's just the speed option, the read option with Rod B and myself today. All right, Rod, some disappointing Texas football news to open up today's program. Within the last hour, the Longhorns received a disappointment from the transfer portal. Vanderbilt transfer safety Donovan Kaufman, who had Texas in his final two, took to Twitter to commit to Auburn. Mm. It was Auburn and Texas. Those were the final two schools for Donovan Kaufman. And he tweeted out a little bit less than an hour ago, hashtag War Eagle, along with a picture basically announcing his commitment to Auburn. So that was a safety target for Steve Sarkisian and Texas, and Donovan Kaufman has committed to Auburn. Not a huge shock. A lot of the Auburn mods felt pretty confident about Kaufman committing there over the last couple of days, and Auburn's new defensive coordinator is Derek Mason, who was Vanderbilt's head coach last year, who was the guy who recruited Donovan Kaufman to Vanderbilt, where Kaufman started his college career. So that's a loss for Texas. And Rod B, the safety room, for me, still a grave area of concern, or an area of grave concern, I should say, for Texas. They still have some questions there, and unfortunately, they could not get one of those questions answered by Donovan Kaufman.
I think, unless, you know, maybe I'm missing something, I think a lot of these moves that are being made, some of them at least, not all of them, but these offers in the secondary, because I think we've seen quite a few recently where Texas is offering guys in the secondary. We're going to talk about another one here in a second. I wonder maybe if that's just looking at the a more short-term plan overall at the in the secondary, and that this could not only be them looking at the roster for this particular year, but also maybe for next year. You go look at, you know, a lot of your cornerbacks and your DBs, Deshaun Jameson, Darian Dunn now thrown in the mix too, Josh Thompson, Schooler, B.J. Foster, they're all seniors. I mean, all those guys are done. This is, you know, the year they're going to contribute, and I think it's, you know, I think it actually bodes well. They're going to have a very experienced secondary this year. But looking ahead to 2022, I mean, your secondary guys right now, at least the pieces projected looking forward, Chris Adamora, Tyler Owens, Keaton Crawford, Jadae Barron, J.D. Coffey, that's about it.
Mm.
I mean, literally, that's about it.
Yeah.
Everything else after that, it's pretty much a, I'm going to say it's a wasteland, but it's uncertainty at best in terms of who are your assets you can look at in the secondary. So I think some of these moves are looking at, because that guy had, what, 4 years of eligibility?
Yes, left? Only played 1 year at Vanderbilt.
So I think some of these moves are looking at the, you know, the most recent future for this Texas Longhorn team. And of course, we know when you're looking at, you know, the long-term fix for anything for Sark is going to be in recruiting. But I think right now, when you're looking at the transfer portal guys coming in, I think they may be looking at 2022 as well. Just so people don't miss the forest for the trees type of thing. Right? It's not just for 2021. I think also 2022 is a possibility as to why these guys are so aggressive at the transfer portal.
I agree 100%. And yeah, Donovan Kaufman would have had 4 years of eligibility if he came to Texas. Well, I guess he still does at Auburn. But yeah, not just a guy who could have helped this year, but a guy who could have helped in the future as well. And anytime you have a chance to get a guy with some college experience versus just bringing in nothing but incoming freshmen from high school, you want to jump at that opportunity. So I'm with you there. How are you feeling about the safety room right now, though? Do you think Sark and Pete Kwiatkowski and this coaching staff should be looking at immediate help at safety for 2021? I mean, you mentioned some names, and you mentioned guys who have experience technically. They've been in college for a number of years, but not a lot of starting experience outside of B.J. Foster. We don't even know if B.J. Foster's going to start this football team. Yeah. He was working with the twos during the orange-white scrimmage a few weeks ago. Brendan Schooler, technically a fifth-year player, but the last 3 years he's been playing on offense, so he doesn't have a ton of experience at safety. Do you think that this coaching staff should be looking at an immediate safety for 2021?
If you find an upgrade, yes. But, you know, there's no guarantee you're going to find an upgrade because you do have talented players at safety position, guys who were highly recruited. And even though, you know, Schooler's been playing offense, he's a really good athlete and started some games at safety for Oregon. We've seen B.J. Foster start some games at safety for Texas. So I think that you start looking and you look at the upside of guys like Tyler Owens. And I think Chris Adam Moore is probably going to have a little bit more success and be a little bit more compatible with Kwiatkowski's scheme than the way Chris Ash was trying to use him, which was turning him basically into a glorified hybrid outside linebacker. And I think in this system, they're going to utilize him in a more a secondary role, not just on the second level so much, trying to help in the run game. So I think Kwiatkowski will be able to utilize the talents of the secondary a little bit more. Anthony Cook's a guy I didn't even bring up, who's also going to be a senior too. But as another guy I didn't bring up. So I think there are so many different different types of DBs, right? Defensive back skill sets that you have to choose from. Deshaun Jameson, Darian Dunn, Josh Thompson, Anthony Cook, B.J. Foster, Schooler. I mean, they were using Schooler as a linebacker, essentially. He was a guy that came down to linebacker depth in the spring game when they were going up against 12 personnel on defense. So I just think there are a lot of versatile defenders in the secondary, and I can't wait to see how Kwiatkowski is going to use them. But yes, definitely, if you can find an upgrade in the immediacy to upgrade your talent pool in the secondary, you got to do it. But even in the foreseeable future, which is 2022, as I was talking about, you got to look to upgrade there as well. And I think that's what they're doing. But man, upgrade, if a guy is truly that talented, usually, you know, I don't know. They don't find themselves in a transfer portal that often. I know it happens more and more these days, but I don't know if they're going to find a true upgrade in the secondary. I mean, Darian Dunn, I think, was a serious upgrade for them, and I don't know if he's going to end up starting for Texas. Mm-hmm. I think Josh Thompson and Deshaun James are going to end up being your starting corners. So what do we think of as upgrades? Not necessarily always an upgrade when the coaches get a real-time evaluation of these guys.
Yeah, I've got questions at corner, but I feel way better about corner than I do at safety. And we're 108 days away from the season opener. If you told me, Rod, that Jaron Thompson and Brendan Schooler are going to be the two starting safeties for this team against Louisiana, I'm not going to feel all that great. Now, you might be right. I don't think there are any obvious upgrades that are out there in the transfer portal. And usually if there are super talented guys who enter the portal, they usually have a home by now.
Yeah,
the pickings are a little bit slimmer this time of year once you get to this point in the summer. So I'm not sure there is an immediate obvious upgrade at safety, but man, I just do not feel great if the starting safeties are, I would not feel great if the starting safeties are Jaron Thompson and Brendan Schooler. And look, maybe Pete Kwiatkowski is good enough to maximize those guys' skill set, and maybe Blake Gideon can get the most out of those two guys, but You're talking about not a lot of experience there, and I'm not quite sure how much talent we're talking about there either.
I think you should be, just looking at the secondary, the cornerback should be a strength. They weren't last year, I understand that, but all those guys are seniors. DeSean Jameson is primed for a breakout year, and even what we saw in the spring game, he looks like he can be that ball-hawking cornerback that the Longhorns need. I think he's going to be the best, probably the best player in the secondary this year. That's the way it's trending anyway. You should be able to lean on your corners that they can hold up in coverages. That, if that is the case, I think the safeties are going to be okay. But if the safeties can be exploited, or you're asking too much out of them because they have to help the corners, which is what happened last year, right? You had to bring those safeties down to help those corners a ton, and it really limited what you were able to do in terms of schematically, conceptually with the defense, in terms of the pass. The passing game concepts you were able to defend, because the corners needed so much help. This year, if the corners can hold up, then I think you'll be a lot better off. And I think they should be, because they're seniors.
Yeah.
I mean, and they got to be better than last year. I gave you the numbers. Last year when they were targeting in Texas corners, they gave up an explosive pass play, 20-plus yard pass play, or they committed a defensive holding call or a pass interference call every 4.6 targets in their direction. They only made a play on the ball every 13.3 targets at the corner. So they're going to be better than that. They can't be that bad. If they're that bad, then we should all pray. We're going to need it.
Yeah,
and be not a prayer and Bud Light.
And I think
They won't be that bad. They'll be better than that, because last year they just played so robotic, and the way they had to play everything. They thought they had to play the deep ball a certain type of way, and I think Chris Ash may have been a little bit rigid in the way he was forcing, because he was the secondary's coach, in the way he was forcing the defensive backs, at least the way that they were going through their progressions, that they had to go through step one, step two, step three, and operate in that capacity. And the truth is, in football, you can't really do that, because things don't work out that way. I was just listening to Lincoln Riley at a coaching clinic where he says, all of my quarterbacks, they used to read the mesh differently. Some of my quarterbacks wanted to read it as a progression, because they were A, B, C type personalities. Some of my quarterbacks, they wanted to read it as a picture, as a Polaroid. Literally, they would get a kind of a grand scale view, if you will, of the mesh, and they would basically throw to space. He said, but I would listen to the quarterbacks, and whatever they told me they preferred, or however they saw the game, that's how we would build the concepts.
Smart.
And that's, I think all football players work like that. The way Rod Babers is going to play the deep ball is not the same way Quentin Jammer is going to play the deep ball. Have you seen Quentin Jammer? His 36-inch pythons? So you have to just provide resources to these defenders and these football players, teach them the game, and then they'll decide in the right situation, in the right circumstance, which one of those tools you are provided to them, which one is the best to use in that situation. And instead, I think Chris Ash was telling these guys, hey, you got to play it this way. If you don't play it this way, you failed. Yeah. It's like, whoa, no. There are plenty of ways to skin a cat. This ultimate success is to defend the ball and to keep the pass play from being completed. If you can do that and still actually take care of your obligations and responsibilities within the defense, then that is a successful play. It don't have to look the way you want it to look all the time.
It sounds like having that mental checklist can cause some problems, right? You're just thinking too much instead of going out there and actually playing.
That's exactly what it is.
And I think we saw that at times from the Texas corners last year. By the way, Rod, if the cornerback play this year is as bad as it was last year, you're going to need something a little stronger than Bud Lights. You're going to have to go to liquor instead of beer.
That's true.
Speaking of the cornerback position, how about this? Last night, Texas offered a transfer corner. So bad news in regards to the transfer safety, Donovan Kaufman, who picked Auburn over Texas within the last hour. Last night, Texas offered a transfer corner, a Caleb Evans from Tulsa. Rod B., do you know any a Calebs?
A Caleb, no. I thought at first you were saying a Caleb. I was like, a Caleb?
No.
A Caleb, that's the name.
Not a space Caleb.
No. A Caleb.
A-K-A-Y-L-E-B.
Hey, that's creative, man. You got to give some props on that one.
Do you?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever met or heard of a Caleb. So
does that mean it's a good name?
If he's a good player, it is.
Hey, if he comes to Texas, it's a great name.
If he's a baller, it is. If not, then yeah, it's going to be tough on
That's
him.
True. It's a two-part equation
really
here.
If LeBron was just working at, 7-Eleven, I don't know if LeBron is as cool as LeBron is when he's in one of the all-time greatest players in the history of the NBA.
That's a great point.
Exactly.
Yeah. If a Caleb comes to Texas and he's good, he's got the coolest name ever.
Exactly.
If one of those two things does not happen, name sucks.
Not as cool.
We're not cool with it.
Not as cool.
But Caleb Evans has spent his last 4 years at Tulsa. He's 6'2", 188, would have 2 years of eligibility remaining. He's actually from Texas, from McKinney, up in the DFW Metroplex. Had a couple of Power 5 offers out of high school, ultimately chose to sign with Tulsa. He's got a lot of offers now, though, Rod, as a transfer. Texas, obviously a huge offer. Notre Dame has offered. Three other Big 12 schools have reached out to a Caleb Evans as well. Kansas State, TCU, and West Virginia. So there's a chance Texas fans are either very happy or very unhappy with Evans' ultimate decision. Started 23 games in 4 years at Tulsa. One of those a redshirt year, so really 3 years at Tulsa. No interceptions, but did have a total of 11 PBUs during his time with the Golden Hurricane. So I don't think, Rod, just doing my research on this guy and watching some highlights of him, I don't think this is a plug-and-play starter by any stretch of the imagination, but here's a guy who could provide some depth, not only for this year, but like you were talking about, for next year as well.
Yeah, I think that's it. And he's 6'2".
Yeah.
6'2", 188.
He's a Dan Quinn guy.
Yeah. He's
the Cowboys have their eyes on him already.
Long, rangy, Legion of Boom-looking corner. I'm with you. I think it's more about depth. I think it's depth not only this year but for the foreseeable future. He's getting some really respectable offers. So I haven't watched film on him yet, so I won't get into too depth about evaluation of the young man because I haven't watched film, and I will do some of that, especially if he ends up committing. I see exactly what Pete Kwiatkowski and Steve Sarkisian are trying to do. I think they're just trying to get insurance policies, contingency plans for the future and for this year. I do think they believe they have enough able bodies and also high level talent, experienced talent and talented depth in the secondary. I think they believe that for this year. But the Kim Kardashian, Nicki Minaj, Serena Williams size, Cardi B size, but is injuries happen. Knock on wood. Mm-hmm. All right. Guys want to transfer.
Yep.
That happens. All right. We know that's a real possibility.
Middle of the year.
Exactly. Well, once a guy starts seeing the real depth chart in training camp, somebody may decide, I'm third on depth chart. Okay, I'm out. I'm getting out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that to look at, and your overall evaluation of guys. You want to give yourself as many options as possible as a coach to be able to evaluate and to foster competition. So I see exactly what they're doing. It makes sense. I haven't looked at the transfer portal. I don't have access to it, but I'm going to trust that these are some of the best available talent at DB in the secondary. In the secondary that's available in the transfer portal.
How do we get access to the transfer?
I don't know. I know some people who do have access, but I don't know if it's legal that they have access to it, because they tell me that I can go see this guy's in it. So I don't know who is actually legally within the rules, I should say, allowed to have access to it. But a lot of people do. A lot of members of the media, I think, may have access to it, or at least they know somebody who does.
I gotta reach out to my dark web connects and see if I can pull something off.
Maybe on the dark net, man.
If you're looking for a game to watch a Caleb Evans, you can watch a Texas game, Rod. He was on that Tulsa team that came to Austin in 2018.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And remember, that Tulsa team gave Texas a scare in Tom Herman's second year. Texas only won that game
by 7 points. 7 points. I remember that. It got really, because at first they were winning. I want to say they were winning by 2-3 scores.
I think it was 21-0 Texas at one point.
It seemed pretty comfortable. And I believe, was it a fumble by Sam?
And it was a bad turnover.
I want to say there was a turnover that happens. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching the game on Longhorn. Was it on Longhorn Network?
Yeah.
Because CDC actually comes on the mic at the time, I believe, with an interview with Lo Galindo. And I want to say my man Ahmad Brooks at the time. And that's when the comeback starts. I say that's when they started making plays, if I'm not mistaken. And I could be off about that. I believe, wasn't it on LHN?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so I want to say that's the game, but maybe I'm mistaken. If I am, I apologize. God. But it was just funny the way it worked out.
Yeah.
But you're right, that was way too close.
That should have been a sign.
That, well, that team ended up winning 10 games.
That was Tom Herman's best
team.
The
best team.
Still should have been a sign. Unbelievable. Hey, that was a really good Tulsa team, though. They went 3-9.
Yeah, you're right.
No, they went 3-9.
Oh, they went. I thought they were good the year before or something. No, they weren't?
They might have been. They weren't okay. good the year. They almost all beat right. Texas here in Austin. But, yeah, Caleb Evans has played a game at DKR, so we'll see what happens. But last night, Texas offering the Tulsa transfer cornerback, Caleb Evans. He would have 2 years of eligibility if he comes to Texas. Hmm. By the way, some great news for some lifetime Longhorns. Got to give some love to Sam Ellinger, who has officially signed with the Indianapolis
Colts. Oh, nice. Congrats.
That's right.
Sam Ellinger,
not the only former Westlake Shap.
Straight cash on me.
To sign with the Indianapolis Colts today. Kylan Granson.
Oh, yeah.
Who went to high school mm-hmm. with Sam. At Westlake has also signed with the Indianapolis Colts. So you did a great rant of the day last week talking about how rare it is for a certain high school to have two kids drafted.
In the same draft?
In the same draft. Well, Westlake had that this year. Both guys drafted by the same team in the NFL.
To the same team.
And both guys signed their NFL contracts on the same day. So congrats to the Ellinger family, the Granson
awesome.
Family, and Westlake Nation out there, man. Pretty damn cool. Wishing those guys the best of luck. There's some Texas football conversation to open the show. We are 108 days away from the Longhorns taking on the Ragin' Cajuns of Louisiana. Oh, man, I love that mascot. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. When we return, we'll shift gears. We'll go from Texas football to Texas Rangers baseball. It's time for our weekly Rangers report with Jared Sandler of the Texas Rangers Radio Network. And Rod B., our resident Astros fan, has some trash to talk to Jared Sandler after the Stros' four-game sweep of the Jurors over the weekend. That's next.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD, hump day edition of the Triple Option. And you know what that music means. It's time to bring on the friend of the show, Jared Sandler, because it's time for our Rangers report. Jared, how you doing, brother?
What's up, Rod? I'm no longer mad at you. you know, we weren't on the same page last week. I think, I'm not positive, but I think we can work through this and still have that amazing relationship that we had prior to me learning you're an Astros fan.
And it's amazing, the humility after you break out the brooms on somebody. I guess that's all it takes. Get a little humility there.
I'm trying to offer peace, but you have to bring that up.
Oh, man, no doubt about it. Hey, man, let me ask you this. How is the morale? I mean, not even being hyperbolic, though. How's the morale of the Rangers right now, considering they have lost, what, 7 of the last 8? They did have that win over the Yankees, which was, I'm sure that was a nice boost. But is this the most dismal part of the season they've had so far?
Yeah, I mean, definitely from like a win-loss standpoint,
yeah.
It's the most they've struggled. I would maybe contend that they were playing. There was a period earlier in the year where the quality of the baseball was a lot worse. But yeah, you know, that was a part of a road trip in which they lost all 6 games they played, 2 against San Francisco, and then the 4 against Houston. And you know, that definitely, that's not fun. And I don't think they had fun losing those games, but. I think that it's I didn't get the sense that there was like frustration, like we need to have a team meeting type of frustration, okay. Right? I think that they felt like, you know, the 2 San Francisco games they lost, there are a couple bad breaks. I mean, you know, they obviously didn't do enough to put themselves in a position to withstand those bad breaks, but I think they. I don't know, Rod, you know this, you can always spin things mentally, and sometimes athletes do, you know, mm-hmm. not in a bad way, but it just, it helps maybe reinforce confidence or whatever. And I feel like, you know, as far as the 4 games against the Astros, I think that the way the coaching staff kind of approached it was, guys, you got beat this series. Like, this was a team showing you how you need to ultimately be from like a lineup standpoint. So in a way, they, instead of like taking time to be like ticked off about it and lamenting on the fact they got swept, it was like, hey, we're in a rebuilding phase. Look at that lineup. Look at how tough they are with 2 strikes. Those son of a guns are what we want to be from a lineup standpoint, not from a trash can standpoint, but from a lineup standpoint. And I think that I think that messaging kind of almost suppressed the disappointment and was more of a, yeah, like we can do this. This is an example of what we need to do.
Jared Sandler of the Texas Rangers Radio Network joining us here on the Triple Option with RBKD. Jared, two more games against the Yankees, then back-to-back-to-back divisional series for the Rangers. This feels like a little bit of a ridiculous question to ask in the month of May, but is it kind of make-or-break time for the Texas Rangers, like to prove that they can actually hold their own in this American League West?
I'm trying to think of the best way to answer this one, BK. If you are someone who foresees playoffs or a playoff race in the future of 2021, then yeah, you know, I'd say this is going to be a tough stretch for them. I guess I have a tough time answering that because I'm not assessing it in that way. Not like to sound not competitive or whatever. It's just, I think I've come to terms with the fact that this is a team that isn't going to compete for a playoff spot in all likelihood. Mm-hmm. Don't tell them that, but you know, I'm standing up here and just my assessment, that's kind of what I see. And that's sort of the approach I think the organization is taking from a rebuilding standpoint. So I guess, yes, you know, that it certainly is a tough stretch, but I'll tell you, no one here is like, no conversations that I'm having with people are like, hey, like, you know, they got to get through this to compete in the AL West. It's more like, hey, this is going to be a good challenge for them to see how they compete against some really good teams, and specifically, you know, how they compete against the Astros after they got their tails kicked last week.
Hey, Jared, since you guys were playing the Yankees, a lot of talk has come up recently about Joey Gallo to the Yankees. They need a left-handed bat. A lot of people believe the Rangers may be willing to sell because they're, you know, middling or rebuilding and nobody's really sure. What are your thoughts? Is that just, once again, a conjecture, rumor out there, or is there some substance to Gallo to the Yankees?
Yeah, I think, you know, what I can tell you is that I know the Yankees were interested last year. I know the Padres were interested last year. I know the Rays were interested last year. So I imagine that if those teams were interested last year, that at least tells you that they know what they're getting in Joey Gallo. You know, I think we probably, maybe last year around the trade deadline, we talked about how, you know, there's certain players, like the Rangers had Lance Lynn last year. Every team would love to have Lance Lynn. Now, maybe not every team is willing to pay the price that it would have, you know, required to get Lance Lynn. But, you know, the way Lance Lynn pitches, it's maybe some teams like him more than others, but no one's going to be like, well, I just don't want that guy. With Joey, his style of play is kind of polarizing. And maybe there's a team that doesn't mind his style of play, but they only want one, like, big swing and miss strikeout guy, or they only want two, and they've already got their two. You know, they don't want to build a third into their lineup. Maybe some teams are like, I just don't, you know, good player, not the fit for us. You know, philosophically with how we operate, that's not the type of player we want to help fill our lineup. And then there are going to be teams that they would love him. You know, I think San Diego, they've built a lineup full of guys that just don't swing at bad pitches. I mean, they're the best at laying off pitches outside of the zone. That's something they value, and Joey Gallo would contribute to that. He would make them, you know, even better defensively. And, you know, they wouldn't need him to anchor their lineup. He'd hit sixth or seventh, and I think they see, potential in Joey, you know, contributing in a big way without all the attention on him like maybe, you know, it is here. So I think that, yes, the Yankees, I could absolutely see that. I think that any team that is in need of an outfielder, and the Mets, you know, with all their injuries, that's come up for them. I think they absolutely are going to look at Joey. And the fact that he is so good defensively certainly helps add to his value. He's starting to have more of a Joey Gallo type of May. The power's coming back. That definitely helps because that is obviously a big selling point. But, you know, I don't know – from a bat standpoint, Jose Ramirez could get traded. And, you know, it's possible, obviously, Trevor Story gets traded. But just looking at bats in general, Joey's certainly, you know, in the conversation as far as one of the more appealing bats likely to get moved to the deadline. And then when you hone in on outfielders, you know, he might be at the top of the list. So for a team that's in need of an outfielder, or a team that maybe is in need of a left-handed bat, you know, maybe the first name possibly they consider is Joey Gallo.
Jared, I agree with you 100% in terms of the Rangers being a rebuilding team, being a team not competing for a playoff spot this year. You know, when we do get closer to the trade deadline at the end of July, who makes the final decision, right? I mean, this offseason, the Rangers brought in Chris Young to be the GM, but John Daniels is still on staff as the president of baseball ops. Like, ultimately, do you know how that relationship works and who's going to have the final say on whether or not a guy like Joey Gallo does get dealt at the deadline?
First of all, did you say July?
July, yes.
July.
That's a religious, like my rabbi said I had to say it that way.
Got it. Okay, we must not have the same rabbi then. I was very impressed, and it was very natural. It didn't sound forced. I like. Yeah, I think ultimately John Daniels is the guy who is still the boss, right? He is Chris Young's boss. I think the goal is that, you know, in his own choosing, that he gives up more and more power. And I think Chris Young has the latitude to basically do what he wants. Now, if it's going to be a Joey Gallo trade, I don't think it's like JD sitting on a beach and Chris Young's like, you know, navigating the trade conversations. And then, you know, while JD's sipping a pina colada, he's like, hey, Gallo for this guy, just letting you know. And then he gives like a thumbs up emoji. Like, I think that like he's in the trenches with Chris Young, but I think that he's very much, Chris Young very much has the latitude to, you know, initiate things and do things kind of on his own. But I think at the end of the day, it's still a collaboration. Now, at this time next year, BK, maybe it is a little more like that, you know, where Chris Young is basically leading the charge and JD maybe is working on special projects. But this is something that JD has wanted to do. You know, he has wanted to kind of give up a little bit of control and maybe transition into a different set of responsibilities while still overseeing the ship, but letting someone else handle the day-to-day. I don't know. I don't know that there's like a clear way to maybe describe like a split, like 60-40, 50-50. It's definitely a collaborative effort, but I think it's less of like Chris Young. I don't think Chris Young is necessarily asking for permission. I think when it comes to these conversations, they're working together to try and figure out the best solutions and the best opportunities.
Hey, Jared, in the last game versus the Yankees, the Rangers actually started out hot, right? They were up 3-0 in, what, the third inning? And then they shut down. The bullpen of the Yankees just shut them down. He had one hit after the fifth inning, I think, something like that. This has been a trend because I saw it was their 10th loss of the year after leading at any point in the game. They're 4-7 now in one-run games, 502-run games. What are your thoughts? Is it something about this team they can start out pretty hot, get the lead on a team but can't close it out?
Yeah, you know, I think yesterday it originated from the rotation. Mike Foltynewicz is the guy who, you know, had a tough time getting out of the fourth inning and, you know, he gave up the lead and this Yankees team's tough to come back on with their bullpen. I think if you, you know, obviously expand beyond just yesterday, you know, you threw the records out there. Obviously it's something they haven't consistently been able to do, win some of those close games. I think some of it's just young team, you know, team that's trying to figure out how to win, and you know, maybe eke one out at the end and scratch and claw to kind of get that run or figure out the ways to separate. I think the other part is just it's an inexperienced bullpen and one that, you know, because of that inexperience, it's kind of volatile in their performances. You know, one night Brett the Guts looks like a guy who like absolutely was a steal of a Rule 5 pick. And then, you know, some nights it's like, I see why the Dodgers didn't protect him. And, you know, that's to be expected. I think, you know, one of their challenges, Rod, late in games is that, you know, they have Ian Kennedy as their closer, and they really value utilizing him in the ninth inning. They've got Josh Spores, who has really earned high leverage opportunities. But after that, they don't really have a right-handed reliever who kind of fits the profile of late inning stopper. Yeah. Hunter Wood was just added to the mix, and you know, maybe he earned some of those responsibilities, but You know, if Josh Forbes is not available, they kind of lack. I mean, they're backwards in the bullpen. You know, some bullpens, it's, you know, they got one or two lefties, and maybe they're looking to get a third just for depth purposes. But this bullpen, it's the other way around. They're very lefty heavy in the bullpen. They need maybe another guy to get reliable right-handed hitters out late. And you know, I think of that Astros game in the finale. Joely Rodriguez was the guy on the mound who gave up those runs late. Listen, Joely hadn't allowed a run in 10 straight appearances going into that, and he can get righties out. But I think against the trio of hitters he had to face to begin the inning, and ultimately I think he faced seven hitters, you would have loved for you know, a tough righty to be the guy on the mound in that situation. And the Rangers, just Josh Forbes wasn't available because of how he had been used the two nights before. And so I think that lack of depth, right-handed depth in the bullpen, has really been a hurdle they've had to work around so far this season.
Jared, 30 seconds. Do the Rangers win at least one game against the Astros this weekend?
Yes, absolutely. I do not tolerate 0-7 against Houston, and I'm pretty fired up for Friday night. I think I hope Rangers fans bring it. You know, all things being equal, the Astros deserve it wherever they go, and hopefully it creates a fun environment this weekend.
No doubt. No doubt about that. Great stuff as always, Jared.
Thanks,
we appreciate the time, man, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds good, fellas. Be well.
Right, you too. There he goes. Jared Sandler of the Texas Rangers Radio Network. The Rangers Report has been brought to you by Line X of Austin and the Texas Truck and Trailer. Check him out online at linexatx.com.
Love talking to Jared after the Astros beat the Rangers.
Oh, served him a nice slice of humble pie.
Yeah, he had to eat some of that crow. He was a pretty, he's pretty boisterous.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty boastful, we talked before the series started. He was sure the Rangers were somehow either going to win the series or tie the series. I don't know. He did not think they would get swept.
No.
I guess that's what happened. The broom is a different story.
I don't know how you can be boisterous about this Texas Rangers team.
He was braggadocious
really
at the time.
Any Texas Rangers team in the last 4 years. Not a lot to brag about there. Many thanks to Jared, though, for his time. Always a fun conversation. Catch every Rangers game over on 101.9 and AM 1260, including Rangers-Yankees tonight at 7 o'clock. And yes, that Rangers-Astros series coming up this weekend. I think we're going to have tickets to give away to one of those games. So
nice.
Keep it locked in here to the Horn. We'll try to hook you up. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. Alongside Rod Babers, I am BK Brad Kellner. Yesterday, I teased that we might be getting some news about Jericho Sims in the not-too-distant future. Well, the not-too-distant future was last night. We've got an update on the Texas big man and what the news means for Chris Beard and the Horns. Next. It's a Way Back Rap Wednesday on the Triple Option with RBKD. Alongside Rod Babers, I am BK Brad Kellner. No KD today, no KD this week. He is out on vacation, an averagely deserved vacation. We're not calling it well-deserved around here. He doesn't deserve that. Averagely
You're
deserved.
Not calling it well-deserved.
Yeah.
I will call it well-deserved.
Okay. You're nicer than I am. But,
that is also obvious.
I'm standing by what I said. I feel good about it. Welcome back to the show. Thanks to Jared Sandler for his time. A little bit later in today's program, we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to this Saturday's Rangers-Astros game.
Astros!
Up in Arlington.
That's right.
At the Gilf.
Mm-hmm.
The second matchup between these two teams. First matchup in Arlington. So be locked in here on the Horn for your chance to win a pair of tickets to Saturday's game.
Bring your trash can with you.
Bring your trash can.
You got to hide it, though, through the gate. You got to make sure it's inflatable. Hide it.
Yeah, and even the inflatable ones are getting picked up at ballparks around
so
the country.
Stupid.
I know.
How do they do that?
I know.
Out of all of the dumb things to enforce, really, you're going to enforce that?
And you're an Astros fan, see?
I'm an Astros fan. They deserve it.
Yeah.
I want them to have the hatred. I want the you know, the tour. That's good. They hate the Astros hatred tour. That's fantastic for Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Let it happen. Because I think it fuels the Astros a little bit. Not all the time, actually. You know, sometimes they fold in the midst of all the animosity and the angst. But I think ultimately it'll fuel them. Either way, it's good for baseball. Let it happen.
Agreed 100%. Yeah. And yeah, it's the home ballpark ushers that are taking the trash cans away.
Yeah. What's going on here?
Getting rid of the sound makers. So,
man, if it ever comes out that the Astros are complaining about that, and that's what's happening, They'll never live it down.
They'll never live that
They'll
down.
They'll never live that down.
No, they won't. Yeah. All right, so keep it tuned into the horn for that. But let's talk some Texas basketball here on the Triple Option with RBKD. It's funny, Rod. Yesterday we were talking about the 2021 Texas basketball roster and what it might look like, and we were trying to figure out what's going to happen with Jericho Sims. I kind of hinted towards some news
Gringo Damas
that would be
here.
Coming down the pipe, and sure enough, last night, an hour after we got off the air, Brian Davis of the Austin American Statesman tweeted out that Jericho Sims has filed paperwork to be eligible for the NBA draft, but he has not signed with an agent.
Good
so he can still return to the University of Texas. Now, he had until the end of May to declare for the draft. He's got until mid-July to withdraw from the draft. So he still has some time to decide whether or not he wants to hire an agent and whether or not he wants to return to Texas. So he has declared for the draft. I don't think that's any surprise, Rod. I mean, that makes sense. If you're back and forth, if you're on the fence, why not declare, but don't hire an agent so you keep your options open?
Smart move.
But that's where we're at right now, and I still say doubtful. I would still say like less than 30% chance that Jayco Sims is back in Austin.
Yeah, but I'm telling you there's a chance.
Yep.
There is a chance. I do believe that he has received some advice that, hey, you're going to be a late second-round pick, maybe a mid- to late second-round pick. And if that's the case, I think he's definitely open to being in the developmental league or whatever the NBA decides to do, in the G League, whatever. But I believe that he's also got the option to go overseas. I'm sure that he'd be plenty of teams would be interested in him playing over in Europe or somewhere overseas. And I'm sure that he's open to it as well, but I believe he'd rather go a more domestic route if possible.
Yeah.
That's why, and I think that's why he's leaving his option. Because I think even – I know he wants to be a professional because I know he wants to go make some money for the reps that he puts in, and he deserves it. So I'm not going to judge him, but I think he's starting to believe now that if he comes back to school, that his NBA prospects will be the exact same if he goes back to school and comes out next year.
Right.
And so now he's thinking, well, okay, then what? It's not going to hurt me necessarily to go back. It won't hurt me that much, but I think he just wants to get paid. He's tired of being an amateur athlete, man.
I don't blame him.
That's what it comes down to.
I feel like if you're good enough to play professionally, even for very little money overseas, it's better than making $0 playing amateurly.
Yeah.
If that's a word.
But overseas is different now. You know, I know COVID, obviously, is we're hoping we're at the tail end of this thing. But mm-hmm. still, a lot of stuff has changed overseas with COVID. And obviously, economically, it's hit every business in America hard. So I'm sure it's hit business hard over there. So I'm sure that he's still going to get paid big money. But I wonder if he's just having second thoughts about, oh, no, I'll just go overseas and I'll take the more scenic route back to the NBA.
There's got to be some family pressure, too, right?
I'm sure there always is.
It's like, hey, there's a chance for you to get paid right now. Why put it off? We could use this money right now. So I think that's part of the equation, too. Jericho Sims has to take care of his people. And, yeah, I don't think Jericho Sims, if he returns for another year, I don't think he's going to play himself into the first round.
And he's not going to play himself out of where, I don't think his stock would drop necessarily.
I don't think
that
it could
much.
Drop that much.
But he could get hurt. But he could get hurt.
I don't know if it would raise to the point where it would be obviously worth it for him to come back. Right?
Yeah.
Like, we talked about Greg Brown a lot, and Greg Brown ultimately decided to go to the NBA and hire an agent. So we know he's not going to be a part of this team next year. But, like, Greg Brown could have gone either way. I mean, he had a very wide range of what could have happened if he came back to Texas.
Yeah.
If he had a great year, if he did what we thought he was going to do this year, he's a lottery pick, maybe a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
If he came back and did what he did this year and looked like he doesn't really know what he's doing on the floor, then all of a sudden, hey, forget first-round pick. You might be talking about an undrafted guy.
Yeah, or undrafted.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
Which would be an absolute disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for Jericho Sims, I just don't think his range is that much.
No, you're right. Good point.
It's tough to turn down. Like, it would be tough to turn down the money. I would love for him to come back. I think Texas, I don't want to say they need Jericho Sims, but, man, he feels like the missing piece right now. If you can get Jericho Sims back and you bring in one more guard from the portal, then all of a sudden you're talking about a roster that's more talented than the roster that Shaka Smart had here last year. And that was a roster that, won the Big 12 tournament title for the first time in school history. But Jericho Sims would go, he'd help this team out a ton.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's hard for me to blame him for considering leaving.
He's got to July 19th?
Got till July 19th. I think 4 p.m., just a random dime on July 19th before he has to either hire an agent or withdraw from the draft.
It's good news that for Texas that he at least kept the options open, but I think you're right. I think he's ultimately gone.
And he listened to Beard. I mean, I know they had a meeting. I'm sure they've talked a couple of times, and they're staying in contact, right? Chris Beard has to figure out how he's going to fill the scholarships for this team. But, I think with each day that goes by after that conversation happened, I feel like Jericho Sims is thinking more and more, man, I'd love to make some money for doing this.
Six figures, I know it's not a lot of money for, I don't know how much they make overseas, right? I have no idea. But six figures is not a lot of money for when we think about professional basketball players in America, because they make millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Still.
Yeah.
But he's just making good money. Quarter of a million.
It's good money.
Good money. Right? Yeah. $250,000. It's good money.
And I was always told, I don't know if Jericho Sims has my dad as a financial advisor. He probably doesn't. That would be very weird. I feel like my dad would talk to me.
I bet your dad's pretty wise with the money.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he'd help Jericho out a ton.
Exactly.
But I was always told growing up, like, man, start putting away money early. The earlier you put money, the more you're going to save, and retirement's going to be a lot easier. So for Jericho Sims, it's like, man, if I go pro right now, that's 1 year's worth of money that not only do I have right now to take care of me and my peoples, but also I could take care of my kids down the road. I could start putting away.
Yeah. I see. He says, I'm just pulling this up. I don't know where it comes from. Euro League teams offer a typical salary. It can range anywhere from starting salary for non-star players to $100,000 to really good players, $2 to $5 million. So it's all over the place. And depends, I'm sure, the league you're in and, you know, how prestigious and affluent the team is. But, man, six figures.
Six figures, man.
Like you said, so I'm saving that dough.
No doubt. So there's the news that dropped last night. Jericho Sims has filed paperwork to be eligible for the NBA draft. But he still has, 2 months? July 19th is the deadline. Today is May 19th. 2 months to decide whether or not he's going to remain in the draft or return to Texas. We'll take your thoughts. 337-3776 is the Specs text line. Alongside Rod Babers, I am BK Brad Kellner. When we return, Paul Feinbaum, every Texas fan's favorite college football analyst. Paulie had some interesting comments about UT and also had some things to say about both Oklahoma and Texas A&M. I'll tell you what he said next.